Well, for many of you that might have missed last week, I thought Ernie did a great job of giving a background and an introduction to 1st and 2nd Thessalonians. If you haven't listened to it, go online. I noticed it was online couple days ago, so it's getting online very quickly. But for those that maybe weren't here, I'm going to just do a little recap. And the fact that Paul went to Thessalonians, to Thessalonica, to preach and to work with the people. And he only had 3 times of visits. And in his 3 visits, in his 3 presentations, he talked about Jesus Christ that turned the world, that world upside down. And then disruption, chaos ensued. So he was whisked away. And the letters that we have at 1st and 2nd Thessalonians are to the people. And it's interesting to look at the title of today's lesson and look at preserving relationships. What do you think of? Or how do you preserve relationships? How do some of you preserve relationships?
Staying in contact.
Staying in contact. Okay, that's a great point. Staying in contact. What do the rest of you do to preserve relationships?
Good communications.
Okay? Staying in contact, good communications. We know a lot of people that have a lot of contact but not good communication, and they gripe about being together, don't they? Oh, I have to go see my family this weekend, blah, 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 blah. So those 2 things are very important. What else do we do to preserve relationships?
Accepting diversity.
That's real important. To know how to accept something that's different than our own frame of reference. Without that, we're kind of locked into a certain way things have to be. What are the rest of you? What do you do to preserve relationships?
You deal with commonalities.
You deal with commonalities. Okay? You look for commonalities. You try to find ways to connect. Okay, what other things do you do?
Prayer.
You what?
Prayer.
Pray, okay. How does that preserve relationships? Tell me how it works for you.
Well, if you meet somebody, like, you know, you work where I work, I see people, I don't know what background they are, what culture they go, you know, but I see nice people, so I pray, God help me to connect with these people to start to, you know, some kind of
okay, so that prayer stimulates a consciousness in you of how to be with them in a way that would stimulate them to understand what you believe. And okay, so that's a consciousness we have. Now, it's interesting to think about how we all preserve relationships. I'm the director of the Family Counseling Center, and yesterday I got a bill in the mail for a tax bill of $300 for the property taxes. Well, I pay half in November and half in end of June. Well, I look at this. I said, well, I paid it. So I went down to the office, and I said to them, I paid this June 25th, June 26th, put in the mailbox. Well, I don't know what happened, sir, blah, 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 blah. I said, well, there have been construction in front of our building. I don't know if the mail person didn't come get our mail out of the slots that they have. And said, well, you can call this number. So I call this number. I said, listen, here's the deal. I paid it. You have record of the check. You've deposited it. Now you say, well, that, sir, is because it came on July 3rd. It had to be postmarked July 2nd, and it was postmarked July 3rd. I said, well, listen, do you think anything came of my explanation? Not a bit. Not a bit. Because it has to be marked July 2nd. And if it's not marked July 2nd, you get a penalty of $300 and some. Now, we all sit here and say, oh, we all sit here and start griping about government and stuff, but that's just the reality. It's not about preserving relationships. You had your hand up.
I was just saying, treat other people the way you want to be treated.
Okay.
treat others so that you want to be treated. Okay, you can see the dilemma that Paul had as he went to the different places to try to help people understand. They had the mentality of the person on the phone when I was telling them my dilemma of why I paid on time. Sir, it has to be marked July 2nd. It wasn't marked July 2nd. Therefore, you have a $300 penalty. And you know what? I was interested. At first, I was so angry and I was frustrated. I wanted to reach through the phone and say, listen, don't you get it? And then I thought, you know what? It's just money. What am I making this? You know, what am I making this anything more than it is? It's events that occurred where the road's been worked on, where they didn't come get the mail for several days. Reason I know that, because I mailed my own personal from my house, and I mailed on the same day I mailed from the organizations. And mine at the house went through. The organizations didn't get there until July 3rd. But I can imagine the mindset of believing that I have to do this and this and this in order to be saved. And it just creates that sense of you work really hard, you try to do it all right, and then, I'm never going to make it. And then the futility, and then the frustration, then the anger. So you can think about what Paul came to tell these people and how it radically changed that mentality of versus what we have to do and how we have to do in a certain way to understanding a relationship. And all of the things you said about preserving relationships, we can see in Paul's ministry as he went from place to place. So after being with in Thessalonica and having to be whisked away there, he went to Berean. Is that how it said? Berean. And there he met people that were ready to look and dig into it, dig into the truths that he was going to say. Probably got excited, you know. He probably got excited thinking about, wow, look at these people. They're not only just listening to me, they're going back and reading for themselves. As a teacher, Angela, what do you get excited when you see students take hold of things? When they get it. And how do you know when they get it?
Because they're able to tell me and demonstrate it.
They're able to tell you and demonstrate it. That's exciting, isn't it? That's exciting. Anybody else have that experience when you're working with others? You get excited when they get it? But what happens when he's there? People hear, hey, he's over there 50 miles away doing the same thing, and we've got to go and crank that. Now, you know, this is interesting. You think about preserving relationships. If you have fear, that is going to override almost everything else. So the fear of this new message that Paul was bringing was so distressing to these people that they no longer, it's not only let's get him out of here, it's he's over there, we've got to go stop it over there. And you can see how it fear is an amazing thing. I work with a lot of couples at times, and many times a couple will come in and they get divorced, and I'm working with one of them, and the other will say, but I still want to know what so-and-so's doing. You're not divorced yet. You haven't let go. And you can imagine these people. He's not in our town disrupting, but we got to go over and get it over there. Go ahead.
That even happens within the church. I'll tell you a funny story. Several years ago, there was I was an industrial arts teacher at that time, convention in Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a national convention. And so there were probably six, at least six of us from Andrews and teachers from all over the area that were there. So for Sabbath, we all got together. There were probably 15, 18 of us all total. We said, what church are we going to go to? And one of them said, well, such and such church in Milwaukee has a lunch after church, so we'll go there.
Potluck, hits them every time.
We all get to the church right after Sabbath school started. They broke up for classes. So we said, well, we're not gonna, you know, just count on one class. So we split up. We all went to different classes. And it wasn't 5 minutes that we were into those classes and somebody was coming around to the teachers, to all the teachers. And instead of the teacher being like our leader is here, finding out who people are, they just got right on with Sabbath school lessons. So when they got done, they finally asked, you know, well, who are you? And so we introduced ourselves as teachers from Adventist schools all across the country. The teacher goes, they came and told us you were all the shepherd's rods that were coming in.
Oh, that's funny. That's funny. It is an interesting thing. And you know what? Fear is something that works as a protection for us at times. It's a necessary thing. But yet, if we make that decision and live our life based on fear, you can imagine what happens. You know, it's phenomenal how that works, that process works. So when we're preserving relationships, we're going to meet others that are going to be distressed by that. You know, that was an immediate response to those, uh-oh, these are shepherd's rods here. They're coming to check us out. Instead of, wow, we have an opportunity. And you know what? I think I would imagine that's what took place with Paul on these journeys. So once again, Paul is escorted out. He's got to be leaving. You know, you think about Paul. He's like, oh, what's the deal here, guys? You know, come here and everyone wants to get rid of me. But that just tells you a lot about Paul's personality and his life experience. You know, one thing about Paul, who was first Saul, was it didn't matter what his purpose was, he was going to fulfill his purpose. That was his writing focus. Whether he's going to kill the Christians or the people of the way, he's going to do the best job of that. When he's converted and understands, he's going to come back and do that. And that was a challenge that he had at times. He goes to Athens. And there, he kind of does a presentation among all the Greeks philosophers. And does a probably very eloquent, very intelligent presentation. But as soon as he mentions something that doesn't fit with the individuals that he's speaking to, they want to start laughing and sneering at him. He started talking about resurrection. Well, to the Greeks, that was like ridiculous. You can talk about creation all you want. You can talk about things that we know how to connect with. But when you get outside of that, we're going to just laugh you out off the stage. But there were some people there that responded too. But we get a little hint of Paul as he learned that sometimes it's a matter of recognizing I don't have to try to get into a debate with these people, try to make it all sound good. It's just a simple message. We get that in Acts. In Acts chapter 17, verse 11 through 14. No, Acts chapter 18. Oh no, verse 11, 17, 11 through 14. No, I'm getting confused here. Oh, it was saying here it's 17. Seb 32, when Paul reached this point in his speech to start talking about a man named Jesus who was raised from the dead,
The city fathers interrupted Paul and questioned the rationality of a resurrection. Others made fun of him, said, "We'll listen to you concerning this sort of thing other time." The meeting broke up and Paul went back into the city. However, a few did follow Paul, and when they heard more about Jesus, they believed. So, you know, I think that's an important thing for us is, you know, we think about preserving relationships, whether it be wherever we live in our lives. There's going to be people that respond, people that think, "Oh, man, those guys are crazy." And Paul, I think, probably had a lot of that, but he also knew how to handle that. You know, you can see that he dealt with that. He moved forward in his life. Then he goes to Corinth, and there is where he sort of makes the decision. I'm going to go to the Gentiles. Chapter 18, verses 5 through 8. About this time, Silas and Timothy arrived from Thessalonica. Paul attended the synagogue with them, being compelled more than ever to show the people from Scripture that Jesus of Nazareth was the promised Messiah. But when the Jews refused to believe and started cursing Paul, accusing him of blasphemy by making a man into God, Paul shook the dust off his feet and said, "I will not preach here again. I've done so in all sincerity. You have to face the consequences of your own unbelief. From now on, I'll preach to the Gentiles." He left the synagogue and was invited by Justus, a Greek who had been worshiping with the Jews, to come next door to the house and preach there. Now, you know, that's a fascinating thing. You talk about preserving relationships. It's not only he's not going to preach there, but come next door. Let's do it right here. And I think that's always an amazing thing. When one thing is shut down, something else opens up. But the challenge is, how do we know, you know, how did you know with Dallas Holmes that it was being shut down?
There was no question.
There was no question. Just because every thing you did came up dead end. And I think Paul probably came to that point of everything I'm doing. You know, think about these prior experiences here. I'm going to change my focus here. And a door was open for. And I think that's the exciting thing as we read these things, is how all of these things are about preserving relationship. You know, he recognizes it's time for me to make a shift. You know, you think about Jesus coming to this earth. That was the ultimate of preserving relationship. He came at a time when the world was the most spiritually dark, but had the most knowledge of any time in the history of the world. And you think about the way he came to preserve relationship. You know, he washed the feet of the individual who was going to, not crucify him, but was going to betray him. You know, the night before, he did everything with those disciples, even though he knew they didn't have a clue. To me, that's phenomenal. The fact that he continued to do and work with those disciples, understanding that they really did not have a clue about his ministry. You talk about the ultimate preserving relationships and what he did. You know, and then you can go back and look at other times in the history. Look at what Abraham, how he was having an opportunity to get into the mind of God through his son Isaac when he took him on that journey where he thought he was going to sacrifice Isaac. Where that was the instructions. Preserving relationships. He was allowed a privilege to understand the mind of God. And I think that, to me, is an interesting thing of how we can see that from the beginning of Adam and Eve till we can see it today in our lives. And I like that progression of looking through all of those and understanding how God is continually at work to create a relationship with each one of us. And And at times, it's interesting that we can't see it at the moment. It's only kind of in a historical perspective. It's as we look at our lives, we can see that. I think Paul, you know, look at his life and how he had that opportunity, you know, how he could see back upon how he was going as a man to kill these people the way, and he met Jesus Christ. And then what happened to him in his life, and that process that he went through. So each one of us have that experience in life. Do you ever look back and wonder, why did that happen here? Why didn't this happen? I mean, that to me is phenomenal when I look back, you know. And you know what? At times you think about things and you try to figure out what's the best to do. You know, we're at a crossing point in our organization where we're making a lot of changes. And you, as you make changes, you always say, what is the best here? What's the purpose of this? How is this going to evolve? What is it going to do? Where is this all going? Sitting talking to Diane yesterday, and she said, well, 40-some years ago when I started this school, I wasn't sure what I'm doing, and now at this point, I still don't know if I know what I'm doing. And I think that's an interesting thing. Because it always shows me that we're in a process of evolving. And I think Paul, in his process, was evolving. What do you think about some of the way Paul handled himself? He handled himself by preaching for three different weekends, and then things turned upside down. He went to Berean and preached there. And then Athens. He met the people in intellectual realm. And then Corinth. He finally was had enough. It's like, okay, I'm going to change my focus here. So tell me your thoughts about some of Paul's methods. We're talking about preserving relationships. Would you like Paul to come preach in our Sabbath school or come preach in our church or presentation? What would you have liked about it? See some of you shaking your heads.
He always spoke from the heart.
Okay, he spoke from the heart.
He didn't have an agenda, a different agenda. His agenda was God's character, God's love, and the essence of Jesus Christ.
Okay, so you knew it was about one purpose, wasn't it?
He could speak from personal experience of how God turned him around.
He could. And he had many a times to do many opportunities to do that. Before King Agrippa, he could say to King, he said, listen, this is what happened to me. It was not about some theoretical, wonderful idea. It's, look, this is where I was going, and look at what happened when I met Jesus. How about the rest of you? What do you think about Paul and what you'd like to, from what you know?
What I like about Paul is there's two things. His consistency in message that, you know, he spoke from principle, from experience. You know, when you talk about the evolution of his ministry, it was always because he was responding to so many different circumstances. So, you know, his response to the Romans were a lot different than the Thessalonians. So we had different circumstances, and he always seemed to sort of, you know, that I think he was very, very emotional. You could tell with his responses about, you know, I'm done with you guys. You know? that it's, you know, he's human. He's very, very personable. Mm-hmm. And it showed that he wasn't just this eloquent, you know, grand messenger. There was all kinds of challenges.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely were all kinds of challenges. All kinds of challenges. And in those challenges, I think he kept focused on what was important to him in his life. And I think that's the key is he didn't waver from what was his focus, even though he was always adjusting to the people around him. You know, any of you ever do preserve something? Any of you ever can something? What's that process? Did it all the time?
All last week.
All last week? What were you preserving?
Peaches? And plums and the figs.
Okay. Now, could you preserve something without that which you're preserving? Without the peaches. Could you preserve peaches without peaches?
No, you couldn't do it without the spices either.
Couldn't do it without the spices. Now that's an interesting thing. So you need the fruit or whatever item you're preserving and then the spices. And I think the challenge sometimes is when we look at things and we start thinking that it's about the preserving process, we forget about what the relationship is. Paul did not lose sight of the focus of the relationship and the evolving process. It wasn't just preserving it and keeping it a certain way. It was the evolving process. Now, when you go to preserve something, you want it to come out. If it's a peach, you want it to come out a peach and not have it change into something else because it wouldn't be preserved. But that's the difference in a relationship. In a relationship, it's always evolving. But the preserving part is keeping focus on that which is really sustaining Paul. That sustains each one of us. And that's the relationship. And I think that's the preserving experience. Sometimes we get caught in the process. We want to talk about, well, you have to do this and you have to do this in order to preserve a peach. Well, that's important. But we lose sight of what we're trying to do. And that's continue the relationship. You know, in 1 Thessalonians, there was this quote that Ernie talked about last week, and it was mentioned again today, and that was to the people. 1 Thessalonians 3, 9 through 12, would somebody read that? Where he told the people, this is how you preserve yourself. 1 Thessalonians 3, 9 through 12. Somebody read that for me.
How can we thank God enough for you in return for all the joy we have in the presence of our God because of you? Night and day we pray most earnestly that we may see you again and supply what is lacking in your faith. Now may our God and Father himself and our Lord Jesus clear the way for us to come to you. May the Lord make your love increase and overflow for each other and for everyone else just as ours does for you.
What would happen if you got that in a letter? Wasn't that part of preserving experience? Have you ever seen a letter that somehow lifts you up? That somehow bolsters you? You know, when you read that from Paul and you hear about Paul being this dynamic speaker, that was kind of an emotional encouragement there. I long to be with you. I'm looking forward to the next time we can get together. I pray that we'll have this opportunity. What a bolstering experience it must have been to hear those words. Because I think that was one of Paul's greatest anxieties. And we get mention of that several times. He kept sending Timothy, go back and see how they're doing. Go find out. Let's make sure we're doing what we can to bolster and continue that process. And I think that's a real important thing there. You can see how he continued to preserve the relationship. He had communication. He had involvement. He related to them. He tried to stimulate them to think about what they're doing. All the things that you mentioned that we do to preserve relationships. You know, he was open to their frame of reference. He looked to understand their experience. And he prayed often for these people. And yet, when he got those words, imagine the encouragement. when Ernie and Rob go out and do their ministry and they come back and share, I always feel encouraged. It always stimulates me to feel other people are having the same opportunity that we have each week. Other people are getting to understanding the recognition of who God is and how much He loves us. And that to me is the most important message that anybody could share. Because that is the message. We find that in 1 Corinthians. 1 Corinthians 21:21-23. 1 Corinthians 1:21-23. And this is kind of his point of realizing what's going on with my ministry here. Where are we in this process? He's trying to discover how do we reach the people here. And you can see his process. And that to me is a wonderful thing about reading things in the Bible, is it's to see the people's process and get understanding as they get to know who God is. It's not just, thinking all these, David or Abraham or anybody else in the Bible. It's getting to know, see how they come in their process and how that's similar to ours, maybe different to ours. Would someone read that, 1 Corinthians
21:21-23. For since in the wisdom of God, the world did not know God through wisdom, God decided through the foolishness of our proclamation to save those who believe. For Jews demand signs, and Greeks desire wisdom. But we proclaim Christ crucified, a stumbling block to Jews and foolishness to Gentiles. But to those who are called, both Jews and Greeks, Christ the power of God and the wisdom of God.
The Jews look for miracles, the Greeks for wisdom. Each trying to come to a relationship, but it's on their terms. They're not understanding God and how He's reaching out. They're trying to make it fit God into their orientation. I need to see a sign. I've been that way. God, I need to know something here. I need to know this is the right thing. And I think that's where the Jews were. Then we think, okay, I'm going to go and get a higher education and I'll get this great intellectual knowledge and then I'll have understanding. That just means you realize you don't know very little in reality. I mean, that's what, to me, my daughter who just took her test, second step of her U.S. Emily test, was saying to my mom the other day, the more I study, the more I think, how could I ever know all this stuff? and my mother said, well, it's not if you know it all, it's you know how to find it out where it is. And isn't that the truth in life? It's not that we're going to know it all, but we know where to find out. We know where to find out. We know whom to turn to. And it's through that relationship with God that we come understanding. But that comes collectively in many different ways. That's what we do in this class. That's how we come together. We have collective wisdom that comes together, but still that doesn't replace a personal relationship. I love hearing then in 1 Corinthians 2, verses 1 through 5, Paul talks more about how he's come to understanding, how he's presented himself to the church. Someone else read that for me? 1 Corinthians 2, 1 through 5.
When I came to you, brothers, I did not come with eloquence or superior wisdom as I proclaimed to you the testimony about God. For I resolved to know nothing while I was with you except Jesus Christ and Him crucified. I came to you in weakness and fear and with much trembling, My message and my preaching were not with wise and persuasive words, but with a demonstration of the Spirit's power, so that your faith may not rest on men's wisdom, but on God's power.
So Paul wouldn't have a song sung to him three times, would he? But I really believe what's being said there.
He had no humor.
But you know what Paul is saying there is so critical. He came with a very humbleness of recognizing that I am not the message. The message isn't about me. The message is about God. And as much as we have fun with Ernie, we all know that when he is presenting that message, the message is not about him. It's about God. That's why we study the Bible. That's the thing that's been the most, one of the most valuable things is in this class is talking about, it's not about David, it's not about Abraham, it's about God. What does this tell us about God? And that's what Paul is coming to. I realize that I come in with fancy speech or I come in with eloquent words, and all that does is impress people that I'm a learned individual. But they don't get the recognition about who God is. And I think probably as a dynamic personality as he was, you can imagine that that was something that could happen very easily. Because he was very well educated, he had ability to present well, but yet he recognized at time that it did not do what he wanted to do. And that was to present Jesus Christ as a living, risen Savior, and that he is coming again. And I think that is throughout Paul's ministry, that is the thing that I think it's always very stimulating to me to think how he recognized how he wanted to change his focus. How he wanted to present what happened to him in life. And how it changed his life. Because you think about it, we've all had people in our lives where it was always about them. Whether it be a minister, whether it be a friend, whether it be a family member, it was always about them. And that then, you know, it's kind of amusing at times. But if you're really presenting the gospel, it's not about who's doing the presentation. It's about the relationship that they create with God. When you're teaching, Angela, you don't want to think, oh, I'm such a smart person. I'm such a smart teacher. You want them to think, I have something to impart that's going to inspire you. And that's the key. It's what happens in that relationship that then stimulates them to start pursuing and understand. And I think that is what Paul came to. He said, I don't want this to be about me. I don't want this to be anything here, what I've got. I want this to be about our relationship with Jesus Christ who has the power to save. And who's come to set us free. I was so amused at my own reaction to that little ordeal of the tax thing and the frustration and anger. And I thought, this is exactly what the Jews experienced. They worked hard. They did it. They did all the things they were supposed to, but they never felt the relief of a relationship. They never felt that sense of, oh, someone understands. And I imagine this woman on the other end of the phone, she's probably used to hearing all kinds of things. And you know, and my logic can go, why would I try to get it on July 3rd when I know there's a penalty if I don't get it on July 2nd? There's a logical explanation here. She didn't care. All it was, it has to be marked July 2nd in order to not get a penalty. And sir, yours is marked July 3rd.
You remind me your lesson next to you, you know.
You know what I've learned? Walk down there, hand them the check, get my receipt, and walk out. And you know what? Don't trust anybody. That's true. Don't trust anybody. I was
Carol and I were meeting with a physician the other day, and he said, that's one thing a surgeon told me years ago. Don't trust anybody. And he had a little more colorful language. But he said, that was his bottom line. I've learned not to trust anyone. That way I can make sure it's right.
Here's another way to
trust and verify. Trust and verify. That's a more relationship thing, isn't it? Trust and verify. But you think about it. Are you going to trust your salvation with anybody else? Absolutely not. It's about a relationship that you have with the risen Savior. Paul knew that. Paul was very aware of that. He recognized where his salvation came from. And not only his salvation, the freedom. He was under that system of, you don't do this, that's it. He recognized the freedom. That's what he brought. That's what he tried to stimulate the Jews to realize. He stimulated the other disciples. Hey, we have to get off of the circumcision and get on to a relationship with Jesus Christ. And you all the conflict in that. So he not only knew of that, but he knew the freedom and the experience that he had. And that's why he could write those words. This isn't about me. This isn't about anything other than me. About your relationship with Jesus Christ. And I think that's the message that we all have. Is we go about, as we talked about last quarter, witnessing. It's about how do we create relationships where people say, wow, you're different. You've got something that I don't have. You've got something that I want. And that only is about as we create relationships. Paul did that. He went and turned places upside down. And you think about it. Was it because he had a new doctrine? No, he had a relationship that he could speak about. And people knew about Saul who turned Paul. So they could see a demonstration. It wasn't just a simple, well, this guy's got some interesting ideas. They knew. And that's what each of us have, is the ability to have a relationship with Jesus Christ. And as we do, things will happen we could have never imagined. And that's the exciting part to me. Shall we pray? Dear God, we're so grateful we come together and study about Paul and his ministry and his mission. We know that in his life he had a relationship with you that was so dynamic that it, no matter what happened, he would continue to preach and to recognize you. May each one of us in our own life have that kind of relationship where we understand and recognize your love and that we come to the